So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
You all whine too much and the coffee's bad. I tell you what you need to do. You need to take a 13th step. Down off your high horse.
Hi, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Spencer Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. You know, sometimes I just got to mess with these intros, and I tell you what, we're working on one that's going to be dynamite before too long. So stick with us and work through it. Home of LouisvillePolitics.com for all the latest. You guys will not be disappointed in some of the stories we're bringing out of Louisville today. And, of course, on Tuesday night, we always have to introduce one of my favorite people, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
I'm one of your favorite people?
You are on Mondays and Tuesdays, yes, sir.
Oh, okay. So
I don't want to confuse you.
If I do anything bad, I got to do it on Monday or Tuesday, and you won't report on it, right?
Well, pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's actually, yeah,
okay.
Because I mean, you're my co-host and my partner. You're my co-host and partner on Monday and Tuesday nights, so, you know, I got to think highly of you those 2 days. You know, the rest of the week
okay.
You're on your own, though. I got to be honest with you. So,
all
you know,
right, fair enough, fair enough. Now,
I
you
just
can't
didn't
go wrong with a Hank Hill. You can't go wrong with a Hank Hill intro, though.
Yeah,
always my favorite one, and Hank Hill. It happens more often than it probably should in the warehouses I work at. But sometimes you just gotta look at somebody, and one of my favorite quotes. You just look at somebody, shake your head, and go, "The boy ain't right."
Well, you got a good point there. You got a good point there. I, you know, as always, there's always something going on. Let's put this out there right away. Let's start with Louisville stuff. We're going to get into more on the Boston bombing, too, because this story just keeps getting even better. But here in Louisville, everyone's favorite mayor, Greg Fisher, has announced today that he will run for re-election. I'll be honest with you. I've been anticipating this for a while, anxiously waiting for this to happen, because now I can go public with all the dirt on Greg Fisher and run him out of Louisville before 2014. So I'm personally glad he decided to go ahead and run, because now I can finally do what needs to be done to help straighten out Louisville, and that is get rid of him. But anyway, what do you think, man? Fisher, good or bad?
Well, you know, I supported Heiner. You supported Heiner. I honestly think if Hal Heiner beaten Fisher a couple years ago, he'd been a much better mayor. I thought Heiner was probably queued up to be probably one of the best mayors we've had in my lifetime. But, you know, it didn't happen. The Democrat machine did what it did. Honestly, I don't know how he won, because I'm telling you, when it if you're going to – the word charisma and Fisher don't go side by side. You know, it doesn't work. So. Wow.
Well, you know, it's actually an interesting contrast you bring up, because, you know, quite frankly, Hal Heiner and Greg Fisher, neither one are what most people would be consider probably charismatic people. You know, Greg Fisher is a monotone, robotic guy. Hal Heiner has personality, but he's not really what you would consider charismatic. If you know Hal, you know he's charismatic. You know he's a nice guy. You know he's a hell of a guy. But, you know, on a campaign trail, people have this.
Hal's a walk up and give you a hug on the sidewalk or sneak up behind you at a Catholic picnic guy because I would know that.
Yeah. Well, that's it. But, you know, it's awful hard for a guy who's unknown to the public that's not really out there like me, you know, that generally is a kind of a quiet guy. It's not really able to show that charisma, you know, in a 30-second or a one-minute kind of a soundbite that they typically get stuck with. I will tell you this. I've been checking and checking and checking. Hal Heiner, Kelly Downard at this time are both out of the race. Kelly Downard will not run for anything, and Hal Heiner you know, he spent over $1 million last time just to come in second, and that's an awful lot of money. So Hal Heiner probably won't run again. At this point, there is no leading Republican to take on Greg Fisher, which is okay with me because I'll make sure if nobody else gets in the race, I will to keep his ass honest because he's not going to make it to the general, folks. Trust me on that. There is enough information out there that hopefully, since the feds have decided they want to come in and take on Republicans like Richie Farmer when it involves state money, not federal money, we've got plenty of stuff to give the feds to take on Greg Fisher as well. So we'll see how that works going forward. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting race. I've been waiting for this announcement. Ed, I'm excited. I'm like a little kid in a candy shop today. I'm excited that he did this. I really am. And I know this sounds bad, but that's okay. Our whole focus has always been to clean it up. Now we get to do that with this particular guy. In the meantime, all kinds of things going on with the school system right now. It's pretty incredible. What in the world we got going here? Okay. Sorry about that. But the Kentucky Education Chief has actually went on record and put out a detailed list of what he considers to be union barriers that are keeping JCPS from improving their low performing schools. Have you seen that story?
Not yet. No. But good for him.
I agree. Apparently, he wrote an 8-page letter, documented more than a dozen instances that he says the JCPS, and that's what's keeping JCPS behind is the union. He wrote a letter to Superintendent Donna Hargens, Education Commissioner Terry Holliday is the Kentucky Education Chief, and he's the one who's pointing out all these things with the JCTA. And I'll be honest with you, I have not seen the final product yet. But for me personally, I'm glad he's stepping up and challenging the JCTA. You know, these guys, this teachers union in this county, I have to agree with Terry Holliday, is the biggest obstacle to doing anything and moving forward with education for our kids. It's incredible to me the power that Brent McKim and the JCTA hold and what they can do to get Democrats elected to maintain their power. I mean, they even tried to lie last year and coordinate with Brian Simpson in his race for House, and they suffered no repercussions for it. They did the same thing with David Toborowski, suffered no repercussions for it. I mean, these guys are dirty and crooked, in my opinion. And I'm glad to see somebody saying, hey, you know what? I'm in a position of power, too. Let's talk about your problems before you start complaining about everything. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I'm glad he's an outsider, and he has a little more power than they're used to because, you know, they don't on election day when the teachers are all off, Brent McKim can't marshal his troops to do anything to Mr. Holliday. It doesn't matter. So, you know, that's one of the things, but I think he's right. I think he's coming in, you know, and people have to answer for stuff. And yeah, I'm all for it, all for it. I mean, you know, to a point that like I say, it's fairly well known. My kids are in private school. My wife works. We both work to put them in there because you know we're just not leaving our kids the chance, hoping to get in the right school and get the right teachers.
Well, you know, and that's it.
I wish the hell that the Jefferson County schools that, there was on a wholesale basis were at the level of my brother's experience with Atlanta schools. You could have saved a lot of money in private education.
Well, and I agree with you. And, you know, and in particular here, especially when we get into the public education aspect of it, you know, once again, we've got a public entity that drains resources. They don't create income. They don't create opportunity. And it's purely seniority driven by people, you know, in a lot of cases that just because you've been somewhere for 20 years doesn't give you the right not to produce, you know. And in our public school system, we really have a problem with that, where the seniority rules at all costs. And these low-performing schools are a good example of that. You know, the seniority, since the seniority is a priority basis, then we can't move good teachers to different schools or different places to help students out, to help raise the education level, you know. You know, they've got a limitation of 1 hour of after-school time per week for any meetings. So if you want to meet to talk about these problem students or the problems you're facing in your classroom, you can only meet for 1 hour a week after school time. If you want to voluntarily meet, you can't do that. The union contract doesn't allow it, you know. So, you know, and then, of course, you know, when you bring in somebody from the outside going into a classroom, these are just some of the things, and these are highlighted in the Courier Journal. I'm not going to steal from these guys. I never do. But these are highlighted in the Courier Journal. But there's also an assumption that if you have a professional observing in a classroom to assist a teacher to help, you know, get better lesson plans, improve the classroom strategies, whatever, then the union automatically assumes this is an evaluation. And it's not. These, you know, we do bring outsiders into the classrooms to see what's going on in these classrooms. So their observations are supposed to, you know, help us find a balance and help us find a way to help the teacher, you know, get to these kids. But the union says, oh, no, this is an illegal evaluation, so we can't do that, so report it. You know, and they want to file grievances on everything like that. That makes no sense to me. That makes no sense to me. You know,
and I agree. I mean, so much stuff in my life, for obvious reasons, is I'm going to mirror it up against how businesses run. And the fact of the matter is, Jefferson County Public School System is turning out a crappy product. And you got to look at all aspects of it, and whether it's an evaluation or not. You know, I have people come in and evaluate. I have people come in and they don't evaluate. They come in and they'll tell you what they've seen other places, you know, because when you get an encapsulated system like that with, you know, essentially JCTA selected board members and all the cronyism that goes with it, and it's an encapsulated system. They don't take much output. They don't take much input from the outside. And you know what? When you're turning out an inferior product, you should be reaching for every life preserver you can get your hands on.
Well, when you consider that 41 schools across Kentucky have been identified as persistently low-achieving schools and have been ordered to undergo some serious overhauls. Now, you know, you got to understand the word persistent here, folks. That means they're continuing problems. They're not getting any better. They're persistently low-achieving, so they've been ordered to undergo some overhauls. But when you look at that 41 across the state of Kentucky, which is a pretty big place now, you've got 18 of those schools, almost one-half of those schools, right here in Jefferson County alone, Fern Creek, Shawnee, Valley, Western, Doss, Fairdale, and so many more. You know, we've got to start looking at what's going on here. In their defense, Fern Creek and Fairdale, according to the last state analysis, are making some good progress. So give those two credit for finally getting in the game. But, you know, when Brent McKim wants to sit here and continue telling the whole world that JCTA is not the problem, I find that very offensive. I really do. And, you know, when the JCTA works in coordination with people like the school board and Debbie Westland, you know, we've got a serious problem here. And I tell you why I bring up the school board and Debbie Westland. State Auditor Adam Edelin has already got a scheduled audit for Jefferson County Board of Education. He has already scheduled a Jefferson County Board of Education audit. So what do these guys at JCPS do? They want to rush and try to act like they were the ones that called for this audit. So immediately Monday night, after they find out Adam Edelin is going to do an audit anyway, Monday night they go ahead and approve a request recommending Jefferson County Board of Education audit. How pathetic is this? How pathetic is this? JCPS board did not request anything. This is an automatic deal, but they want to sit out there and act like they did. And, of course, who were the board members that opposed the request to check out the Jefferson County Board of Education? Debbie Westland and Linda Duncan. Both of these people were people we talked about in the elections that did not need to be there, and this is exactly why. They do not want accountability. Weston wants to go out there and say, we've looked under every rug, we've done everything we can, and, you know, we're doing all we can, so we're going to defend JCPS. It has to stop, like we're on some kind of a witch hunt. No, Debbie Westland, if you were doing your job appropriately, instead of answering and catering to your union backers in the JCTA and Brent McKim, then maybe we wouldn't have to have audits. But you can't do your job appropriately because you're beholden to the people that got you there. And that's a problem for me. Our Jefferson County School Board, Ed, is a clusterfuck. Forgive the language. But am I wrong here?
Well, no. I mean, not, you know, you're talking to a guy, like I said, who spent a lot of my income over the last dozen years because I won't leave my children a chance at that. Now, again, yeah, I heard her on the news, and she was saying that one of these audits is going to cost like $200,000 or something. Like, well, yeah. And she, you know, she made the point like, oh, well, that's like, you know, a couple, two or three teachers or four teachers. Like, so what? You know, let's look at it as a percentage of the overall budget for the school. It's truly a drop in the bucket. Hey, and what the hell? They can raise their tax that they take on everybody, the property tax, 6% every year. And they tend to seem to like to do that. So shouldn't be a big deal, $200,000. But, you know, like I said, they've got a sacred trust on their hand, and they're failing miserably at it. I mean, they are failing. Jefferson County School System, they'll always hold up Manuel Ballard, Eastern, a couple others, and, you know, tell us, hey, look, we've got some nationally ranked schools. It's like, yeah, you've got some nationally ranked bad schools, too. You know, I don't want to talk about that, but, well, you know, and all the politics that go with it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I understand there's going to be two audits, and they're complaining. Well, some people like Westland are complaining that it's going to cost some money. You know, and it's typical politics. If they want to spend it, they'll remind you of just how small a percentage we're talking about here.
Well, for one thing, Debbie Westland is a complete idiot in this case, because the audit's going to cost somewhere around $130,000. And what she's saying is that that's enough to pay for two teachers. You're right. That's enough to pay for two teachers for one year.
In the whole system.
For 1 year. And that's not enough to pay for those two teachers. Because the teacher gets a salary between $50,000 and $60,000 a year, but then you haven't included the benefits and all the other crap that goes with it. So to get two teachers, you're really talking about $200,000 to $250,000, which puts it close to the number you put out. And on top of that, that's only a one-year expense. It's a business expense, one-time expense. When you hire two teachers, you never get rid of them because the JCTA union is going to make sure you don't. So Debbie Westland is trying to duck and dodge as usual. Her good friend Linda Duncan is joining her on this quest.
They throw gross numbers out there when they don't want something. It's like, oh my God, this is $200,000 we don't need to spend. But if they wanted to spend it, they would say, well, this is just 0.1%. Well worth the investment, they would say. So it's like, you know what? Hey, when you're failing, I don't think you can have, you know, you can't have too many audits. I better not say that when it comes to state bureaucrats. But your product is failing. You're at loggerheads with the state superintendent. You know what? Yeah, get in here and get it done. Get the damned audits done and figure this stuff out. Because, you know, they say, well, if Fairdale and what was the other school, Fern Creek, well, they come off that sort of endangered list. But, you know, the thing that kills me is they passed evaluation. They were still, a lot of schools, 16 or 18, were still failing. And they're like, well, they're making improvements. And what I hear when I hear, oh, we're making improvements, is, well, the kids for the next two or three years, they shit out of luck.
And I'll be honest with you, Ed.
The ones that show up 6 years from now are going to have a lot better than those guys who are unfortunate enough to be born a couple years before the kids that are following them. Sorry.
And I'll be honest with you, Ed, because, you know, I also have talked to many teachers throughout the last couple of years, not just in the last week or so. But I've talked to many teachers, and ultimately I find that there is a big disparagement, I guess, between two different groups. The young groups want everything given to them, and they're behind the JCTA all the way. The older ones who have been teaching for more than 10 years are sick of the JCTA being obstructionist, but they're forced to deal with them because they're their union. So, it's really fascinating. I know a lot of teachers go out and they work on their own time and everything else. They don't mind the meetings on their own time and things like that. You know, they actually go to those things willingly. You know, but the JCTA doesn't want them doing that. So when we look at all this and put it up in the scheme, you know, we're identifying yet again another problem because we have this school board. So here's the solution. Here's the solution for me anyway. A lot of school districts around the country do this, and it works fantastic for them. But you do not need the JCPS school board. It's nothing more than a bunch of political lackeys that are bought and paid for by a union to keep the union in power and control with the JCTA and screw the students that they're supposed to sit there and take care of. What we need to do is eliminate them. Forget about them. Get rid of JCPS. You can replace that system with what we've already have here. We have a school superintendent in Donna Hargens, and we have a mayor of Louisville. So why don't you just get rid of JCPS? Make the mayor of Louisville do something other than go out and do photo ops and lie and cheat and steal the American taxpayer. Make the mayor of Louisville and the school superintendent make all the decisions. We now have a central location for accountability, and we eliminate all the red tape that goes with this damn school board. What do you think about that?
Well, at that point, I would hope and pray we have a good superintendent and good mayor. But, I agree with you in large part because, like you say, if anybody that's not from the Louisville area wants to see this very interesting phenomenon, at the major polling places, you know, they always say that the schools are let out and stuff. Wherever there's a board race, conveniently the schools are let out. You will see teachers enthusiastically championing their candidates out front. You know, they probably get a tape measure out and make sure they're whatever, 100, 300 feet from the door, like law requires.
Oh, believe me, they do. I've actually seen them do that.
I mean, they're out there giving it a go. And, you know, probably more enthusiastically than they go to their regular jobs with. But, the problem is that the JCTA owns the school board. They just do. They give their endorsements out, and that's supposed to be something we're supposed to respect, even though the product is faulty. And
well, they not only give
endorsements,
they had to give a hell of a lot of money.
They put money and legwork into it, and they go straight at it. I mean, they really make no beans about it that they are out to control the school board.
Well, I mean, that's absolutely true, and there's a lot of money involved here, too. And it's not just the $1,000 or, you know, $1,200 contribution that's the maximum allowed by law that they give to one candidate. Okay, but they also fund these PACs, these super PACs. They spent thousands of dollars on behalf of Brian Simpson and Dave Toborowski illegally coordinating with these guys on the ad campaign for the last races they were in. And the JCTA was never held accountable to that. The candidates were held accountable, and rightfully so. But, you know, the JCTA and these unions should be held accountable for conspiring and all of this as well, and they never were. So, you know, when you talk about being able to spend $100,000 or $150,000 of free money to a candidate in a local race, that don't pay nothing, I mean, you think about what you expect in return for that, and that's exactly what goes on. And, you know, Debbie Westland and, you know, Linda Duncan and a few others, you know, it's time to get your head out of your butt and start dealing with the real issues. And the real issues are not about you and your ego and you trying to get an elected position so you can kiss the JCTA's butt. The issues are about our children falling behind in school and not being able to compete, not only in this country, but across this world as well. Our kids are getting so shortchanged and so screwed up. And here in Jefferson County, I blame the school board and the JCTA. So let's get rid of both of them. And speaking of unions, Ed, I'm going to get to this other story real quick, too. Have you paid attention to those Teamsters and Jimmy Hoffa?
No.
There's a big story going out right now. Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa Jr. Let me rephrase that. I better put Jr. on there because somebody will actually think I'm talking about Senior. Jimmy Hoffa Jr. Is basically being accused of trying to squash a union comprised of some of his own Teamster organizers. What this is really interesting is Jimmy Hoffa is getting ready to get in all kinds of trouble, actually very similar to the ones his dad got in trouble with. They've got a pension crisis that's getting ready to destroy the Teamsters. Remember that with his dad, Senior? And he's got a potential UPS strike getting ready to come up on his hands. And quite frankly, he can't afford a strike. So anyway, Hoffa has still not granted a contract to the Federation of Agents and International Representatives, or FAIR, if you will. It's a union that represents Teamster organizers. A lot of people think that when you're an organizer for the Teamsters, you're a member of the Teamsters. Not necessarily so. The National Labor Relations Board allowed FAIR to start representing some Teamster organizers last year after organizers had voted 18-16 to unionize themselves in a Teamsters election. So now you've got these guys who are Teamster organizers have created their own union called FAIR, and Jimmy Hoffa refuses to recognize the union. Now, what does that say about a union leader who is refusing to allow his staff to be unionized?
Well, somebody doesn't like sharing the power now, do they?
That's exactly it. It's been very divisive. It kind of reminds me back in the old days, from 1981 to 1994, I was at UPS. I was in management when I left there, and one of the youngest people ever promoted to management. But it was interesting because during that time period, especially in the late 80s, early 90s, you had what was called TDU. It stood for Teamsters for a Democratic Union. And this was a little splinter outfit. It started as a little splinter outfit that wanted to take over the Teamsters and the leadership because they thought the Teamsters weren't hard enough with employers like UPS. They basically wanted to strike over anything and do all kinds of crazy stuff so that everybody would lose their jobs. But of course they thought they were doing the right thing because they were being so mistreated, which was bullshit. Well, anyway, TDU actually finally came to power. The TDU faction finally came to power and got organized and everything else. This faction is what actually put Jimmy Hoffa Jr. in the position of the president of the IBT was this TDU faction. Well, Jimmy Hoffa Jr. has been trying to play hardball, but ironically it hasn't worked, and now he's actually denying unionization of people who actually work for the Teamsters because he doesn't want to deal with the same things that every union shop in America has to deal with. He doesn't want to deal with being tied to contractual provisions. He doesn't want to deal with guaranteed pensions. He doesn't want to deal with guaranteed vacations at time. All the things that every union shop in America has to deal with, he doesn't want to have to be accountable for people that are working for him. He wants a non-union shop to work for the union. That's a scary proposition, isn't it?
Well, that's a humorous proposition. I mean, it's like, damn, really? You know, you go out, you talk the talk for decades, literally, and then somebody steps up. I mean, the one thing that I would caution him is like, hey, wait a minute, Jimmy. These are the guys who are really good at the organization efforts because, you know, remember, that's what you pay them to do. Yeah, you may not want to do it with them, but they're pretty good at it, and they probably heard that before, so they know. I could see if somebody were just transferred from a different union or something. You know, you could probably kowtow them down. But these guys, you know, they're the ones that are trained to walk into shops that might resist their efforts, and they know how to work around it. So that falls into the category of choose your fights a little better.
Well, and that's exactly it. And, you know, and now what he's ultimately trying to do, I guess, being accused of doing now is trying to decertify FAIR. Apparently, instead of going ahead and working with them, putting a contract together and bargaining in good faith like he expects UPS and every other Teamster representative company to do, he's decided he's going to try to strip them of their certification. The way that you do that, for anybody who don't know, you can start a decertification process of your union. But it takes 30% of your employees to sign a petition to the NLRB, and that forces a new election. And that new election, you know, you either win or lose to keep or lose your union. That's how things work. But it's fascinating that this guy is sitting here, you know, basically betraying what the union movement is all about by denying a small group of people who have voted to form a union and have been granted, you know, the union label by the NLRB, and he's refusing to negotiate fairly with them. If I was UPS, I'd laugh at him at the bargaining table. I really would. You know, but this guy's got a lot of major problems getting ready to come at him. And, you know, I'm really curious to see how this works out because as far as I'm concerned, when he does something boneheaded like that, he's caused more problems for labor than any company ever did. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get right to it. We've got more on Boston and some updates on all that stuff coming up. So stick around. You're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springer of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You know, it's one of my new favorites. You guys can tell we're playing from Robin. What the heck? Getting on to business, Ed. I tell you, man, I don't know if you're keeping up with everything going on in Boston or not. But the latest update is that thing number two, Darkov, was arraigned in the hospital, charged in the hospital, read his Miranda rights in the hospital, and took a taxpayer-funded lawyer in the hospital. But it's really interesting because this is the first time that I can recall this has happened. I understand there are some similarities to other bombings that they've done this with, you know, including the Oklahoma City bombing, whatever. But I find it fascinating that we're going through all these precautions for this guy. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think they're just enough concerns were raised about the due process of law. I think they're just doing what they have to do, because, you know, in the age of social media and everything else, people are watching. You know, people are. I don't know who would have started it, but somebody, you know, hey, he didn't get his Miranda rights. But, you know, all the time people are arrested. You know, they're under arrest or something, they get handcuffed to the bed. But no big surprise there. I mean, they're doing what they should be doing. If they're going to take him through a civilian court, he needs an attorney, he needs a Miranda, he needs, you know, a formal arraignment and everything else. So, and they're just doing what they have to do.
Well, you know, it's also interesting to me, though, how deep, you know, this thing really goes. Because we're continuing to look at stories and piecing together everything we possibly piece together about 26-year-old Tamerlane, you know, thing number one. And this guy has got an incredible history of problems right here in the U.S., and he was never deported, and he was allowed to stay here is totally beyond me. You know, Tamerlan was also believed to have been involved in a 2011 triple murder that claimed the life of his supposed closest friend, American friend, Brendan Mess. Prosecutor in Middlesex County, Massachusetts, is going to go ahead and go back and recheck that because it's an unsolved crime. But right after this murder, you know, thing number one, didn't even go to the funeral. That's when he skipped off to Russia for 6 months and started hanging out with the bad guys. You know, so here we've got in 2009, we've got questions about him. In 2011, we've got questions about him. You know, in 2012, we've got questions about him. All of this the FBI is aware of, and the guy is still out walking on the streets and in a position to bomb the Boston Marathon. What are we missing here?
You know, I'm at a loss to tell you what they're missing. Who knows? Maybe they're watching. I mean, like I said, they interviewed him for 6 months to a known hotbed of there's terrorism, Chechens, and they have their issues. And like, dude, you're going into a hotbed. The FBI should have paid a lot closer attention. I mean, you know, the news that came out today, the one that made me just do a facepalm, was when Thing 2 actually, they asked him, well, you know, how'd you make the bomb? He says, well, we went on the Internet and hit an Al-Qaeda site, and we got the instructions of how to make a bomb. They got, like, an online magazine.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up.
At that point, a couple things hit me. I thought, okay, first off, if they're going to a known site like that, I mean, you know, you can track ISPs and everything else and who's going where. Okay, so somebody's hitting a site and looking at that, and sure to God, the FBI and the NSA and the CIA and the Secret Service, sure to God, they're all watching that, you would think, Homeland Security. They're watching that site, you know, see who hits. Go pay them a visit and say, okay, well, what were you doing on that site? But apparently not. And
see that,
then the second thought, I just
that
kind of
keeps
thought that hit.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, the second thing that struck me is how this seems to dovetail right in there with CISPA, you know, where the government is trying to, once again, censor or otherwise take control of a lot of Internet access and stuff. Thinking, either this kid just stepped in it or he is an evil genius who thought, hey, What's the best way I can deprive these cocky ass Americans of their right to free speech? Well, I'm going to say that I got it all off the internet. Now I can only hear, it's coming. The Lindsey Grahams of the world and stuff like that are going to be sitting up there saying, see, we need the authority to have a kill switch or something else on the internet because that's where these guys got their information. You know, so we need to restrict the internet. We need to monitor the internet. You know, we need to make it our bitch.
I'm so glad you went there. I'm so glad you went there because that's exactly what I was actually interrupting you for, was to point out CISPA. Remember, we have talked about the conspiracy theories and stuff. We touched on it last night. And we talked about all of these things just don't add up, that this can't be just two lone guys who are under FBI surveillance being allowed to let this happen. That there has to be some sort of a coordinated effort somewhere because you don't just drop the ball in situations like this and allow this. I mean, it just defies logic. And CISPA, remember, we talked about this after 9/11. We started having our freedoms and liberties taken away. After everything like this happens, we lose more and more freedom and liberty. And in Boston, they got a firsthand look at that during the lockdown. The police, SWAT, and FBI teams were going door to door in full gear with their guns cocked and loaded and ready to go, aimed at people that they were forcing from their homes who had absolutely nothing to do with this. Every house, they illegally pulled people from their homes and searched their homes before allowing them to go back in. While they were searching the home, they had agents outside searching their persons. We touched on this last night. Clear violation of illegal search and seizure in the Fourth Amendment, and yet Americans aren't upset about that. We're not being you know, too worried about that. Have we become that accustomed to this? So now we've got this particular situation where this guy is going to say out loud, and remember, they talked with this kid for a long time before anything came out. They tell the kid, we might be able to keep you alive if you tell the whole world you got this on the internet so we can back CISPA. Because to me, these are all coordinated events designed intentionally to take away American rights of freedom. Now, I know that sounds conspiracy theory, Ed, but it is, I just can't continue going down the road and keeping my mouth shut over stuff like this because people are, you know, say it's not proper. I mean, am I missing something here? Is it crazy to think
that way? You know me, and sometimes I'm gonna say that I think I don't think there's some evil master plan, but I'm also not gonna say that they're not doing that because then again, we haven't heard thing two say I got it off the internet. I mean, somebody could have just you want to go conspiracy theory, so I could just have a press conference and say, yeah, he said he got it all off of an internet site. You know, like I say, at which point I'm going to say, all right, if you were watching, sure to God, you were watching that internet site, right? Okay. Then how did he get it and you didn't pay him a visit? How did he visit it and you not pay him a visit? How did that happen? But, you know, now they're saying, well, he got it off the internet. It's like, well, maybe he said that, maybe he didn't.
Well, that's it. You know, and I mean,
it does seem to coordinate well with CISPA because, you know, SOPA or whatever it was the other time around, if Lance, just all sorts of people blasted their Congress critters, saying, "Don't even think about doing this." You know, they had these little protest blackouts and stuff. So, maybe they're trying to say, "Okay, see, we really do need the control over your information systems. Give it to us."
But we've already got that. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, in my inner circle, I mean, you're part of that inner circle, but you're. Man, you make me look smart when it comes to computers. But, you know, most people consider me the Fred Flintstone of the internet. It's what they call me, jokingly, of course, in my circle, because I'm really not adept at all the things that my circle can do. I mean, these guys can find anything about anybody, you know. But I know how to check ISP addresses and IP addresses or whatever and find out who's checking out my sites, who's reading what I'm writing. I have to know this as part of a package that I can market myself. So when I look at this, that's how I know when people at Louisville Metro Government are reading everything I'm doing, especially on these Democrat articles we put up at LouisvillePolitics.com this week or last week. I know when Frankfurt is looking at stories I've got going on. I know when Washington, D.C. and the feds are looking at stories I've got going on because I can track these IP addresses. I don't have the technology. I don't have the brain that these guys got. I don't have somebody on my payroll that can sit here and have the resources available that the federal government does. If I can find out these things, as easy as it is for me to find out, they have no excuses. They have no excuses whatsoever for not finding out all of this stuff and knowing all of this stuff, especially if these guys were supposedly under surveillance anyway from an FBI file on the older brother, 26-year-old Tamerlane. You know, and this is the thing that puzzles me. There's a great article, mikeinmissouri.blogspot.com. I want you guys to look at that article, and I'll put a link up in the chat room real quick for you guys to check out that are in the chat room, because this is a very fascinating article. It talks a lot about what we are giving up as Americans. You know, after 9/11, we were told we had to be safer. So the government started putting these blue shirt people at us. They call them the United Nations. You know, they ordered us to stand down. Think about the TSA. They order you to stand down so that they can invade your body. You know, the way that they treat old ladies and women and children at the TSA through an airport security is ungodly. If it was me or you doing that to anybody, we would be prosecuted for sexual assault. But everybody has gradually come to accept that because, hey, guess what? It's for our safety. Those are the things that drive me nuts. In Boston, you had a lockdown. Over a million people were ordered to stay home. Businesses were ordered to be closed. These people couldn't go to work to make an income to pay their bills. Their kids couldn't go to school to get an education. You know, all of these different things. You know, you had a couple of people, city and state officials, that decided that on their own. And nobody in Boston objected to that. And then what happens? You got all these SWAT teams, FBI teams, all these other people I just mentioned a minute ago. They come to your house. They got a Humvee right out in front of your house, a military Humvee. They've got machine guns, body armor, all pointed in your direction. And they force you out of your home. They grab you literally and push you out your door so they can search your house illegally. And they can search your person illegally. And nobody's upset about that. That's the scariest thing of all to me. The terrorists have already won.
That's what got me is, you know, and I understand the relief. But, you know, if you're going to do a conspiracy theory, then I guess you would, you know, if you were going to do something like that, you'd take a liberal bastion like Boston. I mean, let's face it. They put Kennedys up and up and up. In spite of everything, kept putting them up. I mean, well, I think they gave us Dukakis, too. But, you know, it's a liberal bastion. And it's, I don't know their gun control laws, but they're probably not like Kentucky. Yeah.
No,
because
Massachusetts has a very strict gun control laws.
The guy probably would have turned himself in saying, oh geez, I'm going to be safer in jail. These people are pissed off. But,
well,
you know, it amazes me how they took it. They took it like a champ. You know, they were in there, and then they said, oh, let's take a picture. What, Mr. Nice Officer bringing us milk. You know, he won't let us leave our house, so he brings us some milk. That's so nice. You know.
Oh, yeah, but have you noticed mainstream media, though, Ed? Did you notice that story about the officer? I'm glad you brought that up, because the officer delivered milk to this one family so they would have milk for their baby. And, man, mainstream media has exploded this. It's all over the Internet. Look at the kindness of this officer. Never mind the videos that we have on YouTube about officers going door to door and literally shoving people and slamming them down on the ground to get them out of their house.
Yeah.
You know, these people were forced out of their
home
before they ever got
the
baby.
You come to my house and say, is he in there? I think me and my German Shepherd might know. Said, no, he's not in here. So if you're going to drag me out, then you're essentially saying we don't believe you. And
exactly.
So here, you know, let's take some rights, shove them in, and break them off on you. But the thing that actually concerned me the most, and I understand the relief of the whole situation, but after all that happened, after they were inundated with, you know, a militarized police force, when the police left, these Boston people, Watertown or whatever, got up and applauded. Now I understand the effort and stuff. You know, an appreciation for the police, but you know, I'm not so sure that you're essentially standing out there applauding in the middle of the night. Let's see, you basically imprisoned us in our houses for a day. You flooded our neighborhood with assault weapons and assault vehicles and everything else, and you got this.
Well, you know,
one
the
guy.
Jews applauded Hitler too. The Jews applauded Hitler too at first. You know what I mean? I mean, seriously, that's what's so disturbing about this. And you've mentioned guns twice now. Well, guess what, folks? Here's another thing you need to know. According to a Massachusetts police official, Cambridge Police Commissioner Robert Haas told the AP in an interview that, damn, neither one of these guys had a permit and permission to carry firearms. But they had all these guns and went on a shootout with police. Now, remember, they want to take all our law-abiding citizens' guns. But these guys had guns. They clearly weren't law-abiding citizens, were they? They had guns, but they didn't have any legal guns, so they got them through illegal means. It's just another example of what criminals will do if they want to. They wanted guns, they got guns. They wanted bombs, they got bombs. We can't be safe 100% of the time, as you mentioned last night. You know, another thing our mainstream media isn't doing, they're not telling us the whole story once again. We've got two foreign nationals that were arrested Saturday that are tied to both of these guys, that are tied to Thing 1 and Thing 2. Did they coordinate with them in the Boston bombings? I don't know. But they were arrested because they're tied to these two. You don't get arrested without charges. You can detain a suspect and question them, but you have to have proof to arrest them. These guys were arrested, but our mainstream media isn't wanting to talk about that. We have to get that information from the UK. You know, and then Tamerlan, the oldest one, the 26-year-old, you know, Russian security services. Last night we mentioned the FSB. That's the Russian Federal Security Service. It's the FSB. You know, these guys told the FBI in 2011 to watch Tamerlan. Why did they do that? Because Tamerlan went to Russia for 6 months and spent six months visiting a mosque that the police watch constantly because this is a terrorist place. This is their terrorist place. This is a place that had that provides a hangout for people that go out and get in shootouts and kill the Russian counterterrorism forces. This is radical Islamist at his worst. And he spent 6 months hanging out there before he came back. When he came back, they immediately contacted the FBI. The Russians contacted our FBI to tell us about this guy because he's running around with those people over there. We can't continue to sit here and act like this is some kind of a random event. We have too much evidence to the contrary, don't we, Ed?
But yeah, I mean, and it still could be random. It could just be one guy, you know, a couple of guys getting really wound up and ready to do something bad. It may not be a whole lot of backup. I mean, the bombs weren't high tech. And guns, who knows? Major cities, you could probably pick them up anywhere. But it's beginning to come out, you know, after the applause dies down. There appear to be a whole litany of failures here. It's like, how in the hell did you miss this?
Well, I tell you, you know, there was a very interesting statement yesterday by Mayor Michael Bloomberg. And I think if you want to talk about the master plan here, and these ultra-left-wing liberals like Bloomberg, who want to take your guns and everything else, you have to look at this statement and you have to dissect it and understand what's really going on here with the ultra-left liberals. Because Mayor Michael Bloomberg yesterday said that the country's interpretation of the Constitution will have to change to allow for greater security to stave off future attacks. He went on to say that we live in a complex world where you're going to have a level of security greater than you did back in the olden days. And our laws and our interpretation of the Constitution have to change. Now, think about that statement. Here's a guy who's known all over the United States and in many parts of the world. The mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg. And he's sitting there telling us that we have to give up freedom for safety. What did Ben Franklin say about that, Ed? Who would give up freedom for temporary safety deserve neither. You know, so here you have. This is the master plan. I firmly believe that. And let's talk about Tamerlan. Here's a guy who had such resolve. You know, that he is, you know, all into his religion. And he wants to kill everybody. Down with the evil American infidel. Friday morning, before the shootout, he calls his mom, telling her that the police were following him and that his brother was with him and that there had been a shooting. Now, he didn't give her any specifics, but he tells his mom that the police have started shooting at us and they're chasing us. He didn't tell his mom he was driving a stolen BMW or that he had just bombed the Boston Marathon or, you know, or any of that stuff. No. He ended the conversation by saying, "Mama, I love you." But she reports that he was so upset that he started to cry and shout. Now, okay, this guy is crying like a little baby and calling his mommy because he went too far. You know what I mean? So don't think these guys aren't cowards. They are cowards. But, you know, the fact that this mayor, Bloomberg, the fact that Obama wants to take our guns, Bloomberg thinks we got to rewrite the whole Constitution, that nobody should have any way to defend themselves, tells us that they don't want us to be safe. They want to dominate and control. I don't see any other way around that. It's very disturbing to me, Ed. It really is. What's coming out of Washington these days and what's coming out of New York from these so-called leaders. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm, you know, again, I try to keep all my options open. I'm not sure if it's some sinister master plan or almost as bad. I'm not sure if people like Bloomberg and Obama and hell, most politicians for that matter, most bureaucrats for that matter, think that we're so stupid and so helpless and so scared that
we welcome this crap. You know, we need them. Like, no. You know what? I've often said, is it amazes me the people that are afraid. It's like, what are you afraid of? I mean, if somebody blows something up and they kill you, it amazes you when you think of how many people have died by terrorist attacks, and you go, oh, I'm so afraid. And then you look at how many people die from heart disease or auto accidents or any given number of things like that. You know, think twice about it. It's like, I mean, really, wish somebody would stand up and just tell the politicians, look, we're not as afraid as you think we are, and we're not as incapable as you think you are. I don't know where you guys got that idea, but you can, you know, just break it off right here, because we're none of the above. We're still Americans, and given the opportunity, we'll work for our money. We'll take care of our own. Don't you worry about us.
Well, I tell you, it's becoming more and more disturbing every day. The more we find out about what's really going on here, the more we see what's happening, Ed. It's just becomes a situation that's almost unbearable, and I can't see why the people in this country are not standing up and saying no more. You know, at the beginning of this show, we got a nice little speech that I started out. It's a short version of a longer one. I may play the long version tomorrow. But, you know, at the end of it, it says, I want you to get up out of that chair, open your window, stick your head out, and scream, I'm not going to take it anymore. And nobody does that. For a million people to sit there silently and allow themselves to be invaded like they were criminals, like they did in Boston, is alarming to me. For somebody like Tamerlan, the thing number one, to sit here and have all of these problems, including a suspect in a triple murder. You know, it wasn't just his best friend that was killed in that apartment, folks, back in 2011. There was three people total killed in there. And they weren't just killed. They were brutally killed. These guys were found by police with their throats slit. That happens a lot in the Middle East. That's their preferred method there, folks. Their throats were slit and their bodies were covered with marijuana. And these murders are still unsolved, and he is a prime suspect in it. These are things that we knew. When Russian intelligence tells you, hey, watch this guy, because he's going to do something bad, you got to take that serious. But we didn't deport him. On the flip side of that, there's a nice little story out today, just to give you another example of how other countries handle deportation. Eric Justin Toth, most people may not have heard that. He's the U.S. most wanted for child pornography. He's a former school teacher who's on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives as a suspect in a child pornography investigation. Guess what? He's been gone for years. But they finally found him in Nicaragua. Nicaragua says, hey, we don't want you. You got problems. So he is being deported to us as we speak because he was illegally in Nicaragua. If he would have entered legally, no problem. They don't care about the charges. But because he entered illegally, and he's an illegal immigrant to Nicaragua, they're sending him right back here. False passport, fake driver's license, and everything. That's what should have been done to Tamerlan. That's what should have been done. Send his ass back to Russia. But we didn't do that, and we don't do that with anybody. And that is probably the greatest problem of all. Ed, we're out of time, dude. Final thoughts.
Well, final thoughts, you know, I'm going to go back to all those people applauding. And like I say, I get it, but as the picture becomes clearer, we begin to see that the bombing was a series of failures. They failed to monitor this guy properly. They failed to analyze it properly, even after the Russian agencies told them, watch this guy. They failed to stop the bombing in spite of all the bomb dogs and the training and everything. They didn't stop the bombing of the Boston Marathon. They really didn't handle the shootout with the first shootout with these two boys, and they are boys. They didn't handle it that well. Actually, they, you know, in a roundabout way, the boys won. Then they didn't handle their search properly because, as I've read, apparently this house where the guy walked out and says, hey, that doesn't look right, was outside of their search perimeter, so they didn't do that right either. And of course, all the amendment violations of dragging people out, terrorizing, you know, locking down the city. Everything they did was pretty much it's a string of failures. And then their citizen actually spots, you know, something amiss, and they catch a wounded, you know, effectively a dying teenager, in a boat, and they drag his ass out and rush into the hospital, and now we're heroes. I'm not so sure.
Well, I agree with you.
The police aren't heroes. I'm not saying the police aren't heroes, but the government on the whole failed, and failed again, and then they caught the guy. You know, his own brother killed him when he drove over him. It's not the cops. So it's like it's just a string of failures, and then it actually ends up with some closure. At least we're headed towards closure, and government's patting itself on the back. And I'm thinking to myself, you have got to give me a break.
Well, it's also interesting, too, because you just mentioned that 19-year-old Darko, thing number two, ran over thing number one with the car, and that's what ultimately killed him. He actually killed his older brother by running over him with the car trying to get away. Now, we know that he did this. This guy is being chased by police. So, you know, the next logical question is, once he ran over his brother, did they stop the chase? Nobody's ever answered that question either. But, you know, you continue bringing up failure after failure after failure. Failures are part of life. I accept that as a reality. We all fail at something at some point in our lives or another. That's not an issue for me. I fail at quite a few things, as you know. That's how we learn. But there's a difference between intentional failure and unintentional failure. There's a difference between intentional consequences and unintentional consequences for that failure. In this particular case, I see too many intended consequences to consider this an unintentional failure. I really do. You know, we've got the whole coordination, and you know, with CISPA is coming through. We've got all these coordinated efforts to disarm American citizens. We now have a citizenry who thinks it's okay to be woke up while you're asleep in bed if you're a nice shit person, dragged out of your house at gunpoint by the FBI and treated like a criminal suspect when you've done nothing wrong and nobody is screaming foul. To me, these aren't unintentional failures. This is an intentional coordinated effort to see just how far we can go to take away liberty and freedom in America. And this example with the Boston bombings and the Boston Marathon and these two yellow-bellied, coward little punk kids were able to do this defies logic. There is nothing logical about any of this. I understand that a random person can commit a random act at any time. But this wasn't a random act. This was a well-thought-out plan of attack. You need further proof? When they went into the apartment on campus for 19-year-old Dokar, they found bombs, they found the BBs, they found all this explosive material. These guys didn't just have a shootout with the FBI agents when they were trapped that ultimately resulted in the death of 26-year-old Tamerlan. No. These guys had bombs that they threw at them and everything else. The BMW, the kidnapped survivor of the BMW, said that they drove to another car and transferred bombs from that car into the BMW, his BMW, that they just stole with him in it. And they were planning to go to New York. Why? Probably for more intentional bombings. This wasn't a random act. This was a well-thought-out process by a guy who was well-known to the FBI. And this was a process that was allowed to be carried out. It's time to wake up, America. Because if you don't wake up and you continue allowing these clowns to go down this road, I've got news for you. Whether you like this statement or don't like this statement, it's not really my problem. But you're creating a Nazi Germany under the guise of a guy by the name of Adolf Hitler. Insert president here. I don't care if it's Obama now or if it's a Republican in the future. We are going down a path of self-destruction because we are trying to sit here and have this false sense of security. Wake up. Don't let them destroy America. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth joins us as usual. But don't forget the Thursday night TNT radio show. I'm sure you'll have a ball with that one. And, of course, Sunday nights at 7 o'clock with a good friend, Kim Mulman, and Liberty Unbridled. All shows at 7 o'clock every single day. Enjoy. Ed Martin, thank you so much. I will see you next week.
All right, sir.
All right, sir. Have a great night. And that's it for us, folks. Enjoy. Have a great evening. Thank you.